Hello and welcome to the Manchester Is Red podcast from the Manchester Evening News. I'm Tyrone Marshall, stepping into the host's chair today. Stephen Railston has cried off with a cold. Says it all about this generation of youth, I think. A slight sniffle, and he's decided he can't host the podcast. But I'm joined by Samuel Luckhurst. It would take more than a runny nose to keep Samuel away from a Manchester Is Red podcast. Samuel, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. I'm doing very well. I think we've got to factor this in ahead of the press game next month as well. If he's going to be that fragile, then we can't have such brittle players. You've got to be robust, as Ten Hag has said this season.
Exactly. Yeah, I think we need to flag that with the gaffer, which I presume is still Neil Costas, which is bad news given the last few years anyway. But yes, maybe Stephen can make a difference. And if you're listening, Neil, I didn't mean that. Where are we going to start today? Let's start with Marcus Rashford, I guess. We will look back on the Sheffield United game. We're going to look ahead to Burnley, but United at home against the 20th and 19th teams in the Premier League this week. It shouldn't be a thrilling week, but they have managed to make it an exciting week. But there's been more discussion around Rashford this week. Samuel, you did the story earlier in the week about commentary players being underwhelmed, I guess, by what they faced against Rashford on the pitch. And then obviously he's come out on Twitter in the middle of the night, I think, essentially. A fan account saying the way Marcus Rashford is being treated is absolutely disgusting. It's cruel. It's abuse. To which Rashford said, "I appreciate your support. It is abuse and has been for months. Enough is enough." 12:36 a.m. That was posted. So early hours of this morning. I mean, this is a conundrum that's been going on all season with Rashford, isn't it? That there was a brief sign of form 6 weeks ago, maybe 2 months ago now. It feels like it's gone again. He's not there at the level. I mean, where to start? What is going on with Marcus Rashford this season?
I think, like his new avatar on Twitter, unfortunately for him, he's in a black hole. And there have been, as you said, a couple of false dawns where he got the goal against Wolves, and it was so early on after the Belfast bender the previous week that it nipped it in the bud very, very quickly. He then did the Players' Tribune chat, and at that weekend scored the goal of the month, a great goal against Manchester City in the derby. And on both occasions, you wondered, right, can he kick on from here? And there was a mini flurry in March with three goals in three games. One was a gimme penalty against Everton, of course, but of course he scored a hugely important goal against Liverpool in the FA Cup. And whatever seems to happen, he can't get going. And every week, United supporters are questioning him. I think in terms of what he tweeted during the night, I mean, I saw the tweet this morning. I didn't realise it was at 12:36, which that in itself, it tells its own story, unfortunately. And I just think he needs a change of scenery. I think it's in all parties' best interests that he moves on in the summer, if that is at all possible. It would, of course, be very difficult to find a market for him. Someone was suggesting possibly even arrange, and it's doable these days, you arrange a season-long loan with the majority of the wages covered. I think there might be a fair amount of that, similar deals to that, because of the profitability and sustainability rules and, of course, financial fair play. It has to be heavily considered. But he obviously was very succinct with what he said in response to a fan account that was supportive of him. But we it kind of passed us by when Coventry equalised and we were in the Coventry section of the press box at Wembley, and it was such a din after they made it 3-3 and with extra time looming, and then Rashford came off and he was booed. He was booed by Manchester United matchgoers, and it did happen from a minority against Chelsea when he came on in December. He's been cheered off a couple of times, and it almost felt as though last week was the straw that broke the camel's back. And look, he clearly came off injured. He wasn't moving freely. He certainly wasn't moving freely when he walked past us in the mix zone at Wembley last week as well. And I mean, I tweeted the video, and tweeted it straight as well, of course, saying that he's not moving freely. And one friend who saw it said, oh, that was about as freely as he moved during the game as well. His form has just been largely dire this season. And if he's talking about abuse, I have no doubt that he's getting abuse from certain fans online. I think most people with a profile get abuse online these days, never mind a footballer. It's an occupational hazard, and the only way you can silence it is to perform. But clearly he's not in a good way. And no matter what they've tried this season, whether it's been disciplining him over having a birthday party hours after a 3-0 derby defeat by City, or dropping him for an FA Cup game after he had a night on the tiles in Belfast a few days before United season resumed, whether it's taking him out of the team, which was the case against it was Chelsea, wasn't it? And Ten Hag even said it was rotational, even though it was very clear just looking at the team that night, although he did bring him back in at the weekend and he put it on him. I think the context around that, which was that, one, Anthony played very well against Chelsea, and then he didn't start against Liverpool, and Ten Hag said he wasn't robust enough to start so quickly after playing more than 100 minutes against Liverpool. I mean, Ten Hag isn't really helping himself. He doesn't have to sugarcoat it. It's very clear that Rashford was dropped against Chelsea, and he probably wouldn't have started against Liverpool had Anthony been robust enough. Or maybe Ten Hag was just trying to stick to the narrative that he came out with pre-Chelsea when he said that selection was rotational, even though the rest of the team was pretty much as expected. And I think Rashford's performances this season, it's one of the reasons why there are still United fans who are not calling for Ten Hag to be sacked out of principle, because they believe there are some players there that should go ahead of the manager. And I don't disagree with that. There are definitely players who should certainly be ahead of him in the queue to go this summer. I mean, I think they do need a change of manager as well. And I certainly don't think that's a remotely incendiary or controversial view to have. I think that seems to be the opinion of the majority now, after the manner of the FA Cup semi-final progression against Coventry to the final. But with Rashford, I spoke to a match-going friend this morning, and he said, you look at the stick Maguire has taken, and I'd probably agree that Maguire has received more abuse, and it's been more widespread, and it has been more caustic than Rashford. And he's had the resilience to overcome a really invidious starting point this season to become, frankly, one of the most important players at United. He's one of a handful of players who's truly in form at the moment. He's the only fit centre-half. He clearly backed himself in the summer when the club were trying to sell him to West Ham. He wasn't happy about the circumstances in the way they tried to sell him to West Ham as well. And it's very rare that a club agree a fee to sell a player and the player remains. And the player actually not only remains, but goes on to do pretty well. And Maguire has certainly done that this season. And the way it's shaping up, even if all of the other centre-halves return to fitness in time for the cup final, if provided Maguire is also fit, he has to start the FA Cup final because of the form he's in. And I know things can change, but reflecting on his season so far, he's had a good season. And it's arguably been his best season, given the invidious starting point, as I said. And he got booed in Las Vegas. He got booed in Dublin as well, in pre-season games. And when he had that run of 14 successive starts, when it came to an end and he came off injured against Bayern Munich, he was serenaded en masse by fans at Old Trafford for probably the first time. It felt like the first time anyway. It's certainly the most memorable. And that's a player who has come through a hell of a lot, but he's shown impressive mental fortitude. He's shown impressive resilience, and he's conducting himself terrifically at the moment. And with Rashford, you just look at the body language, the way he manages his own game, how he fades from games. I actually thought last week in the first half he played reasonably well. I know he missed a very good chance, but the shot that hit the crossbar that led to the corner that they scored from. He was definitely a threat. And United played very well in the first half. They played very well in the first 60 minutes. But you look, and I have no idea what the feedback is on player ratings because it's been many years since I read them. But I have a feeling that because I gave Rashford a 5, I imagine some might think that I went too easy on him. And then obviously you look at the comments and you look at the reception he got from the supporters and the fact that he was booed off. Maybe I did go easy on him, but it wasn't a conscious thing whatsoever. And that just is a reflection of his approval ratings. And look, the matchgoers are not stupid either. They know that his brother met with officials from Paris Saint-Germain at the start of last season. And they used that bargaining chip to get a very steep salary hike last summer. He's one of the best players in the squad. And since he got that contract, his form has fallen off the edge of a cliff. And I'm sure there's a lot of nuance to it and, a lot of context to why he might be in the rut that he's in. And he started the season playing as a striker, and we all know he's not a striker. But he's probably played the majority of the season in his best position, even though he has had to change from time to time. He's had some stints on the right wing. He's had some stints up front. But whatever they're trying, it's not working. And unfortunately for him, he doesn't look happy. And if you're not happy, you have to obviously consider your options. And I just think that given his time at United in the last 4 years, it has been very hot and cold season after season. There's not been a great deal of consistency there. I think they're always going to move heaven and earth to ensure that he signed a new contract last year. But his relationship with the matchgoers is broken, and he's the one who's got to repair it, because the onus is on him. The onus is on him to perform. It's why a lot of supporters get wound up by Diogo Dalot's cheerleading, because they're thinking, look, we're supporting you, but you've got to give us more to shout about. The onus is on you. It's on the players. So what he said last night, it's not, or this morning technically, there's no specificity there in terms of the abuse. What is he referring to? Is he referring to online abuse? If that's the case, then yes, it's horrible. Twitter, whatever it's called now, it has been a cesspit pretty much the whole time, but it's become a bit trickier for certain people to keep their heads above it. Certain users have become more emboldened since Elon Musk took over. But again, you have to just, unfortunately, we have to get on with it. You don't have to see it if you don't want to. That is one, that's one of the perks of it. And he doesn't have to see it if he doesn't want to. And I'm sure he's got 7 million followers. So he's clearly going to be trickier for him to avoid it. But I don't necessarily think he's the one in control of his Twitter account. His brother did accidentally, he got the account smuddled up, didn't he, two years ago, whenever it was. And I think that's why the DNA Sports Twitter account was removed, because I think people had cottoned on for a while that it wasn't Rashford who was doing the posting from his own account. But it's not pleasant to see someone who did so well last season for Manchester United, who's a local lad, who's a boyhood United fan, to be stuck in this rut, in this black hole that he seems to struggle to see the light.
Yeah. You mentioned the body language there and the relationship that's broken, frayed with the matchgoers. I mean, that's perhaps the biggest issue, isn't it? I think matchgoers and fans, all fans, will get frustrated at a poor performance, but you can kind of accept it. No one is perfect every time. We all have bad days at work. What they want to see is maximum effort. And when Rashford gets in these ruts, in these moments when things aren't going for him, when his confidence drops, his body language betrays it, doesn't it? And his body language looks negative. He gives the impression he doesn't care. You know, I think he does care. You mentioned there, he's a United fan. He's a Mancunian, and it is sad to see this. And in a way, you know, we did a panel yesterday about stay or go. And I was, you know, obviously your view you said there is go. I was leaning towards maybe give him another year. But it almost comes down to Rashford now, doesn't it? Because, like you say, he looks unhappy. He looks like he's not enjoying it. He's complaining a lot. And maybe there's an argument the club just put it in his hands and say, if you're unhappy, if you want to go, go. Because this situation isn't sustainable. And even if he does stay, what's got to change? So he's 26 now. We've got to stop this cycle of good season, bad season, which seems to be happening a lot. And if he does stay, if he does get another chance, and you know, it's only 12 months since we were saying how important it was they got him to sign that new contract, he's got to be more consistent, hasn't he? He's got to, you can accept bad games, you can accept a bad run of form, but you can't, it can't be an entire season where his level is just dropping. And that is probably the biggest concern that's maybe pushing him towards the exit door.
And I think the possibly a turning point in his career could come next month when the England squad is announced, because the way that's going and the lack of minutes he had against Brazil and Belgium, I think he had 15 minutes against Brazil. He was completely unused in the Belgium game. I think unless something drastically changes, it's looking like he'll get cut from that squad. England are not short of very good wide players. The amount of playing time Anthony Gordon got across those two games and how reasonably well he did, if he continues to sustain his form for Newcastle, I think there's every chance that he gets in there, because the way it's shaping up, I don't necessarily agree with the front four, not in terms of the personnel, but the way they could be where they could be positioned. But the way it's shaping up, it's looking like Kane up top, Bellingham behind him, Saka on the right, Foden on the left. I don't think Foden should be on the left, because he's better from the right, or he's better centrally. And they did try, certainly during the Belgium game, to just kind of like say, you may be on the left on paper, but you're absolutely not playing there. And that's how it can work sometimes. And of course, Rashford is a very different player to Foden. He's right-footed, for one. But if Foden is occupying that starting that starting place, then the alternatives you're thinking are Jack Grealish and or Anthony Gordon. And even with the 26-man squad, would Southgate really need four different options on the left-hand side? Would it be better to have three on one side, three on the other? I still don't think they've confirmed whether it will be a 26-man or a 23-man squad. So that could offer Rashford a reprieve. And we saw with the World Cup, it was a populist move by Southgate, because there was such a clamour for James Maddison to be involved that he just thought, you know, I could do without this fuss. I'm just going to put him in the squad. He hadn't been in the squad for 3 years, I think it was. And he put him in the squad and he didn't play him whatsoever. So the whole debate, it was, you know, it came and went quite quickly, and Southgate just thought, I don't need this hassle of being peppered with questions as to why I'm not picking someone who's not played for England in 3 years. So he just put him in. So there is that get out. But you also wonder whether Rashford needs that jolt in his career to think, right, something needs to change now. Whether it's him, whether it's the people around him, whether it's a change of scenery, whether it's having a change of manager at Manchester United. Not that he should be pulling rank over that, and he won't be pulling rank over that, of course. But something has to change, or there have to be changes, and the onus is on him. He's got to reassess. He's got to reassess the decisions he's made this season. Why has he made them? Whether it's that birthday party, whether it was going to Belfast, whether it's hiring a supposed PR guru who deals with Jadon Sancho, whether that's a good look. There are so many things to consider. And then you get to his actual game. And I was just not long before we came on this, I was sent a quote that Marco van Basten had said in the Netherlands about him, and which was pretty damning as well. It's the great and the good and the nobodies who everyone's got an opinion on Rashford, and everyone seems pretty aligned with him. And if he wants to open up about why he is having a difficult season, he's more than welcome to. I'm not saying he should do. Sometimes silence is golden. More often than not, I'd say silence is golden. And But really, that's not worked this season. It's when there's been noise around Rashford and he's had to do something on the back of it, he has done. As I said, after the much publicised Belfast jaunt, he scored a really good goal against Wolves. After the essay in the Players' Tribune, he scored the goal of his life. Wonderful, unbelievable strike against Manchester City. So maybe after this tweet and, you know, it's generated what 9.6 million impressions already, and it will probably continue to generate more impressions throughout the day. Maybe that will jolt him. I don't know, but it's just, I think it's quite telling, and it's quite sad that at 12:36 you're quote tweeting a fan account, just thanking them for their support and, you know, talking about this abuse, but not specifying where the abuse is coming from. I assume it's online. I've not heard him get abused at Manchester United's match this season. I've heard him get stick. I've heard him get booed. I've heard him get cheered off during games. I've also heard his name chanted, but I've not heard outright abuse. But I'm sure there have been a minority who have abused him. Whether he's heard it, I don't know. But there has been friction between the matchgoers and Rashford pretty much since that, I think it was the Brighton game in September. It was quite palpable that day, palpable and audible, and it's been a recurring theme of United season ever since.
Yeah, absolutely. That's all for the first part. We'll be back after the break to look back at a nervy win against Sheffield United. Welcome back to the Manchester Is Red podcast. A couple of days then since that 4-2 win against Sheffield United, the fifth game in a row where United have both scored twice and conceded twice. They are appointment viewing for football fans in this country these days, aren't they? You just know, if you invest time in watching a Manchester United match, you know they will deliver for you. Even at 3-0 against Coventry, I think people were still into that, knowing if I'm patient here, this is going to come good. This is going to give me some entertainment. And sure enough, it did. What should have been another routine night against the worst team in the Premier League turned a little bit nervy. Twice behind against Sheffield United. I mean, there's no doubt they deserved to win that game. They were clearly the better team. It just kind of sums everything up at the moment, that they made hard work of it, and they made it a nervous, dramatic occasion, didn't they? When the teams that they're aspiring to be would have just made that a 2-0, 3-0, 4-0 bore fest, essentially. And United's turned it into something dramatic.
Yeah, it didn't really feel that dramatic to me. I thought even at 1-0 or 2, or even at 2-1, I didn't ever think that United were going to lose that game, just because Sheffield United's defence is, it's one of the worst in the Premier League era. And United should have gone 1-0 up. They had a very, very good chance for Garnacho, who really shouldn't have given Wes Fodringham a prayer with that opportunity. That is an aspect of Garnacho's game that he's still got to sharpen up. He does get some very good opportunities, and his finishing isn't always at the level it should be. He is still 19, of course. But there was no, I mean, Ten Hag, I think, said afterwards that there was no sense of panic. And I didn't really twig that either. I mean, they scored quite quickly after Sheffield United scored. Normally it's the other way around. United score and then they concede pretty quickly. I suppose if you're someone who didn't watch the game, and of course it wasn't on television in the UK, and you see that United went behind twice and they needed an 81st minute winner to get past the worst team in the league, that, you know, it tells its own story. It kind of does and it doesn't. I wasn't aware until after the game that Fernandez's winner came in the 81st minute. So that's, you know, I think it's now something like 32 goals this season, United games that have come from the 80th minute and onwards in their 90 minute matches. And fortunately for them, the two that were scored against scored in the Sheffield United game went in their favour. They created a fair amount of chances, but it was almost a bit of a gimme that game. It was just it was exactly the game they needed after the Coventry match. Although Coventry are a championship side, I suppose, and that United made even harder work of that. But Sheffield United have been lame ducks in the Premier League this season. It would have been the law of sod, I suppose, if Ben Brereton Diaz's deflected shot had gone the other side of the post. If he was, as you said to me, if he was a yard further out, it would have gone in, and that would have made it 3-2. And then maybe that would have been difficult for United to recover from. But they were, I don't think anybody watching that game was remotely surprised that United created chances, that they scored a few goals and that they won the game. But there were also some issues with their performance as well. Onana was very careless for the first goal, conceding another goal to a pullback with all but one player in their own area. As wonderfully worked a goal as it was by Sheffield United, United keep making the same mistake even when they win a game. But it's a win. The league season has felt right off for a few weeks now, and it's been a question of whether they're getting in the Europa League or the Europa Conference League next season, and the focus is of course naturally for the supporters, it's going to be on the FA Cup final. And you look at their run-in, they're not necessarily fixtures by and large that set the pulses racing. It's Burnley at home on Saturday. It's Crystal Palace away on Bank Holiday Monday at 8 p.m. as we're all delighted to remind ourselves. The Arsenal one, of course, there'll be a sense of occasion about that because it's two of the biggest clubs in England, and Arsenal will probably still be going for the title. The Newcastle game, which is due to be the penultimate game, could be quite big because that could decide whether Newcastle finish above United or whether United finish above Newcastle. So there are a couple there, but mainly the league games. I think the supporters, the atmosphere the other night, it was never going to be raucous for a rearranged game, midweek match against a team that are bottom of the league. But there was certainly plenty of positives for United, most of all Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah, I was going to come on to Fernandes. I mean, he was clearly the star man, two goals and assists, playing with a broken hand. His injury record continues to be absolutely incredible. Still, never missed a game through injury in, 4 years and 3 months now he's been at the club. I mean, not only is that an incredible record this season, when all you have to do is set foot on the grass at Carrington to get an injury, it is some record. 26 goals and assists. And for all, Fernandes does get criticism. He said post-match that you have to accept that at United. I think a lot of the criticism at Fernandes has previously been based around not his captaincy, but kind of his demeanour on the pitch at times. It's no secret that is a talking point. But as a captain and as a leader, he leads by example all the time. And he's having a superb season, isn't he? And you dread to think how this season would be panning out if it wasn't for the quality and the consistency of Bruno Fernandes.
Well, his scoring run at the moment is terrific. I think until recently, it was quietly going under the radar. But I just thought, even during the Bournemouth game where Stephen and I discussed it, and we saw it, where he was in a form of conflict pretty much from the get-go with Onana and Ten Hag over the way United were playing. And he ended it by wagging his finger after Ten Hag had raised his voice. And none of us, although it was a noteworthy flashpoint in the game and quite interesting, none of us viewed that as Fernandes being insubordinate or undermining the manager. That's just his will to win. And it does rub people up the wrong way. Sometimes there are theatrics from him, ironically from someone who has never been injured. And that might be why he doesn't sometimes get fouls when he does deserve fouls, because he has such a high pain threshold. When I spoke to him after the semi-final at Wembley, I went to shake his hand, and I think it's his right wrist or right hand that's strapped up, isn't it? And he just kind of like limply shook hands with my left hand. And I asked how he was, and he said it was that tumble on the edge of the Coventry area where he went over awkwardly on his hand. But of course, he played on and he scored the momentum swinging penalty in the shootout. His mentality and his skill set, a United worthy. Although he's not been particularly successful at the club, that's not his fault. From pretty much, what is it now, nearly 4.5 years watching him for United, he's a player who wouldn't be out of place in some of Ferguson's greatest squads because of his mentality and his relatively consistent performance level over the time he's been at the club. He had a dip, certainly, 2 seasons ago, but pretty much everyone did under Solskjaer and Rangnick that season. But I thought last season was his best season because of the greater responsibility he assumed as captain, performing from the right, behind the striker, from deep in midfield. I'm surprised Ten Hag hasn't trialled that once or twice this season, playing Fernandes in midfield, because I know he dropped deep a few times against Everton in March and played very well. And he started in that role against them last year, and I'm sure that was part of the thinking. But you can count on him. He's a player that when United line up, if you're a United fan, you're delighted to see him there, to see that he's on your side. And I knew when I spoke to him, shook his hand and asked how he was on Sunday, that as fragile and as delicate as he looked and sounded, there was absolutely no chance that he was going to sit out the Sheffield United game. And there he is starting, scoring the equaliser, scoring the winner and assisting the clincher. And he's got a few winners as well this season. He was doing it, I think, in certainly the first few months of the campaign. What was it? Forest, Burnley. What was it? Fulham away as well, of course, late on. And he's United's top scorer, which again is just... I know it only happened the other night, but it's come out... His goal scoring had gone a little bit unnoticed, I think, but he's already got more goals than he got last season. And he's such an important player for them. He's been their best signing since Van Persie. No debate about that whatsoever. He is the one truly, undeniably successful signing they've made in the post-Ferguson era. With Ibrahimovic, there's that, you know, the second season that United tried to airbrush from history, but it's impossible not to think of some of certainly his Boxing Day performance against Burnley in 2017, and there's a reason why he went to LA Galaxy in March of that second season. But Fernandes has been, he is the prototype for a Man United signing. He's got the right mentality, he's got the consistency, he's got the drive, he's got the will to win. We saw from the first time he came to the club that he was demanding of teammates, he was instructing teammates. He's no shrinking violet. We know that, but we didn't know that then. And he was not scared of pointing things out to teammates or telling them to do things. He took ownership of that team as soon as he arrived at the club. And he was a player who was just gunning for a challenge at a big club. Tottenham and City had a look at him. Nothing happened there. And he's more than taken that chance at United. And he's endeavouring to succeed with them and have as much success as possible. And a player of his ability, he's not had as much success as he would probably deserve. But I think given his current form, it's impossible not to be anything but impressed by him, because there aren't many players at United who tick all those boxes of playing through the pain barrier, of being able to perform consistently. And he had a good game after the game as well, with that quote that he came out with, which was rather amusingly raised by one of our colleagues yesterday, but it's worth getting it up. He said, "Being a Manchester United player demands being ready to receive as much criticism as praise. We receive praise when we do good things, so we can't be annoyed by the criticism." It's just a pity that there are certain other individuals at the club who don't have Bruno Fernandes' mentality. And I'm not just talking about the players there.
And a game as well, the Sheffield United game, that is going to forever be in the record books at Manchester United Football Club. I guess Ethan Wheatley coming off the bench late on, the 250th first team player, 250th academy player to make a first team debut. United rightly making a big deal of that on Wednesday night and on Thursday. I mean, for all the difficulties of this season, unless they win the cup final, it's going to go down as a hugely disappointing season. the academy once again has been a beacon of light this season, hasn't it?
It's probably still the best thing about the club, and it has been for a long time. These past 10 years, if you look at this period as the doldrum years for United, there's been something to shout about regarding the academy in every year. And that was even in 2015 when there wasn't an academy head there. It was in a state of flux and it had been neglected. And finally, Nicky Butt came in and did a very good job. And his good work has been continued by Nick Cox. And the plan they've got mapped out is terrific. I mean, since Nick Cox was made the academy head, what a legacy in terms of the signing of Garnacho, the Youth Cup win, the debutantes, the Kobbie Mainoo, this 250 record now, the 4,000th game, which was against Everton in December 2019. And it was overdue, the 250th. There've been a fair few opportunities in recent months, but because United can't kill off games, or they're always, you know, cause hard work for themselves, it eluded what Joe Hugel, Toby Collier, Habib Ogunayi, Harry Amas, Louis Jackson, even at the weekend, looked like he might have was preparing to come on an extra time when Maguire had the issue. But it's not been a bad week for Ethan Wheatley, scoring two goals against City and winning the Premier League Cup on the Tuesday night and making your debut for the first team on the Wednesday night. I mean, that's boy's own stuff. And it's a pity that the post-match press conference ended inexplicably prematurely. So nobody was able to ask about that. So that was it was a missed opportunity by the club's press officer, I thought there.
That's all for the second part of the Manchester United podcast. We'll be back after the break to look ahead to a meeting with Burnley on Saturday. Welcome back to the Manchester Is Red podcast. Having got a win against the worst team in the Premier League at Old Trafford on Wednesday night, United faced the second worst team in the Premier League on Saturday afternoon at Old Trafford. It should be the same story, shouldn't it, Samuel? It should be a United win. I think Burnley are a better team than Sheffield United. They won 4-1 there last weekend, so it shows they're a better team. It's given them the slightest kind of glimmer of hope that they've still got something to play for. They've still got a chance of staying up. But really, I mean, this should be a United win, shouldn't it? I was going to say it should be an easy United win, but you know that isn't really a genre that's filled very often this season. But after the way they played, and you're right, they did play well on Wednesday night. Surely this is a routine Saturday afternoon at Old Trafford.
One would hope so. I mean, it was nice even with a relatively late win of the other night, that it felt like the write-up was quite serene and stress-free and not laden with drama, even though there were six goals in the game. And, I mean, Burnley up until maybe two, three years ago, they had a pretty good record at Old Trafford. I think they went something like, was it three? Sorry, four games they went without losing there. I think some of those, you had that 0-0 draw where Tom Heaton almost broke his arm, saving a volley from Ibrahimovic. Then they went 2-0 up 3 years on the spin at Old Trafford. And in the first two occasions, United managed to get a 2-2 draw. But then I think it was January 2020, just before Fernandes came in, that Burnley finally got that win at Old Trafford, and they held on for a 2-0 victory. But United have made light work of them, I think, in the games since then. I think they've been pretty unmemorable. One was during COVID. The game earlier this season was a peculiar one that United, I think, allowed Burnley to have more than 60% of the ball at Turf Moor. And it was typically a brilliant Fernandes goal that decided the outcome of that game and spared them from what could have been a fourth successive defeat. I mean, Burnley have shown some reasonable resilience in recent weeks. They've not actually lost. I don't think they've lost many games of late since the March internationals. They had that very creditable draw at Chelsea, where there was an absolutely appalling decision to I can't remember the name of the player who was sent off for a second booking, the penalty on Mudrick, just dreadful decision. But they got a draw there and almost won it from Jay Rodriguez. I think they lost to Everton, which was clearly a hammer blow given Everton's proximity to them and a dreadful goalkeeping error as well. But I think that might have been the only defeat they've had since the March internationals. And
yeah, one defeat in 7 it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's pretty good going there. It's not good enough because they're second from bottom, and I think they could have done with converting a couple of draws into wins there. But last week, I think, although they were up against the worst team in the league, it was still quite a striking scoreline to go there and win 4-1. And they've got some good technicians, as they demonstrated in the Championship last season. I think they've been far too naive the way they've gone about it this season. It was interesting listening to Craig Bellamy when he did a chat with Gary Neville a few months ago, and he was defensive of their principles and sticking by them. And he said where they were struggling was off the ball. It was their off the ball work. But I still think when you look at their team, I mean, they've punched above their weight to get into the Premier League as quickly as they have done. It was a hell of a story last season. And, unfortunately for Kompany, he made that decision to drop James Trafford, who's, of course, the keeper they signed from City in the summer, put Muric in, who was their keeper last season. And he's cost them big time against Everton and then Burnley the next week. It was Brighton, wasn't it? The Brighton mistake was worse than the Calvert-Lewin one. I thought the ball must have hit a bobble, but he took his eye off the ball and didn't control it. And one of the goalkeeping gaffes of the season for him. So I'm always hesitant with what looked like home gimmies for United to say that it will be straightforward, because I think the other night was only the seventh time this season they've won by a margin of at least 2 goals. And you look at the list of the opponents they've done that against, it's Wigan, Newport, Everton twice, Sheffield United, Crystal Palace in the League Cup, and West Ham. I think West Ham was their heaviest, their biggest, West Ham and Everton away, the biggest wins of the season, which is a very modest 3-0. And Moyes said after that game, West Ham played better at Old Trafford than they did when they beat United at the London Stadium. And I was inclined to agree with him. I thought that their actual performance was pretty good, but United were uncharacteristically clinical that day. So I don't think Kompany will struggle to extract encouragement from watching United. A little bit like Coventry last week. I always felt Coventry would unnerve United. That, I mean, they did more than that in the end. And you could see Burnley doing similarly, but it's still a game that even with this United side, they are expected to win because they're coming up against the second worst team in the league. And they've got a little bit of momentum with getting to an FA Cup final, winning in midweek as well. And it's another home game, and it feels like they've been on the road quite a lot this season. So I think they're quite glad to be back at Old Trafford.
Yeah, let's try and talk about Team Newton and what we're expecting from the team then. We think Mason Mount's going to be back. We are recording this before the press conference on Friday. And I mean, it's always inevitable someone will have got injured between Wednesday night and today, because that tends to be what happens to United season. But seeing as we don't know who the likely recipient of the Carrington curse is at the moment, what are you expecting from Team News? What team would you pick? I guess there's not a huge amount of options for Ten Hag there at the moment. And the team, the team that played on Wednesday night played pretty well, didn't they?
They did, to the point that, Anthony didn't play well, but that wasn't exactly a surprise. Yeah. Ten Hag was asked about Ahmad before the game, and he said he deserves it. And then you look at the players available to start, even without Rashford, and you think he's not going to start him. He's going to start Anthony on the right, and that's exactly what he did. And he might as well start Ahmad, because whenever he's brought him on this season, United have either been drawing or losing. So if you start him, you might be winning quite comfortably, and you can bring Antony on with United in a winning position or what have you. I think logic went out the window with some of Ten Hag's selections quite some time ago, and there's no logic to starting Antony against Burnley. But would we be surprised if he was not starting? Would we be surprised if he was starting? No, is the answer. But I'd certainly like to see Ahmad start. He started three times for United in his career. His last start was against Young Boys and Ralf Rangnick's first home game in charge in December 2021. His only two starts in the Premier League were in heavily rotated teams in May 2021. So to go nearly 3 years without starting in the Premier League again doesn't happen very often. It happened with Timothy Fosu-Mensah, of course, that time when he was resurrected like Lazarus for Palace away, went up shortly after the restart in, it must have been June 2020, I think, or July 2020. So I'd certainly have Ahmad in. I thought the experiment of switching Dalot's position to left-back against Rigo in midfield was worthwhile. I mean, he almost scored inside the first 30 seconds. He bungled a very good opportunity to make it 2-2 when he took far too long and was tackled. And yes, he of course, he got robbed of the ball by Brereton Diaz when Sheffield United conducted the move for the second goal. But there was some tactical innovation going on there, and I think the ends did justify the means, even though he had a rather mixed night on the whole. It's worth United's while to flood midfield, get more numbers up top to try and overwhelm what one would describe as the fodder of the league. So I don't think it should be an unchanged team. And Antony and Christian Eriksen did not have good nights, but Ten Hag is limited in certain places. The fact McTominay came on in the second half at 2-2, I think that's a pretty good indicator that he will start and probably should start as well in this game, even though there is or was some method to picking Maynou and Eriksen together in games where United are going to have more of the ball. But Burnley are different to Sheffield United in the sense that they're pretty good at keeping the ball and they like to have their own share of possession. And Eriksen, the fact that he really didn't cut it the other night against the worst team in the league, it kind of typifies his season. He was very good last season. He's not been very good this season. So I think McTominay and Ahmad coming in would be logical calls, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's just McTominay who comes in.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think Ahmad is deserving of his chance and deserving of a bigger opportunity. It was telling that Antony came off at a point when United were still chasing that game. Might have been when they were 2-1 then. It was certainly when it was 2-2 at the very latest. And I think that is telling.
I think it was 2-1. Yeah, I think it was the 50-something minute, very early.
So it was still, United are 2-1 down. You're taking an £85 million winger off them. We've not heard that it's fitness related. So I think that just sort of tells you where he is at the moment. And Ahmad's chance is overdue, but we will see if he gets it. We'll be back on Monday to discuss it, excuse me, and everything that happened at Old Trafford on Saturday. Samuel, thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you, Ty.
That's all for now. Please leave a review, 5 stars preferably. Give us a like, a subscribe. Make sure you're getting us in podcast feed, and we'll be back on Monday to dissect the events from Saturday.